This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
And a few months as well, while we look forward to the elections, we also would be looking forward to the end of certain administrations, one of them being that of President Muhammadu Buhari of the APC, who's had his two term in office. On the show this morning, we get to review that. We get to review the two-term administration of President Buhari. And not just that, we also are aware of how far the presidential campaigns of the APC is going. Which brings us to also ask, when we look at the current administration and how it has performed, what's your position on having another APC-led federal government? This is the question we're asking you, so you can send us a WhatsApp message. At the moment, we're having slight difficulties with service providers and some technical issues with social media handles. So please do well to send WhatsApp messages only to 0809-030-6416. My guest this morning is an aide to the president, Ajuri Ngelale, who is speaking with me via telephone. So if you have questions as well, you would need me to ask him. You can send those questions to us on WhatsApp, 0809-030-6416. I'll go over to the phone lines now. Mr. Ngelale waiting for us. Good morning to you.
Good morning, my dear brother. Good morning to the great people of River State.
I would also like to say a Happy New Year. I think it's the first conversation we're having with you for this year, if I'm not mistaken.
That's very true. Happy New Year to you as well.
Well, it has to come in this circumstance where the country is preparing for the next election in just a couple of weeks away, the presidential election to be precise. And many has been looking at the various candidates who have paid visits to the Chatham House, including the presidential candidate of the APC. But before we get onto that board, let's start off with the performance of President Muhammadu Buhari at the moment. He's winding down his second term. What would we say is his legacy? Is there something we can point to say this is the legacy he would be leaving behind?
Yeah, it's a very pertinent question, particularly as we get ready for the general elections. There's no question that when President Muhammadu Buhari took office, he took office in a time of crisis. You had a situation in which the excess crude account that had inflows of $107 billion from inception in 2004 to 2015 of $107 billion. The previous administration had run it down to $2 billion, $105 billion spent with nothing to show for it. We had, the foreign reserves had been depleted from $60 billion down to $27 billion. The point here is you inherited essentially a near-empty treasury. You had two economic recessions and a once-in-a-century global pandemic. And in view of all of that, what have we been able to accomplish? You have, I think, a legacy of an unprecedented level of infrastructural intervention across sectors. So, for example, before 2015, there was not a single high-speed rail line in the country. Today, there are three. That is not a coincidence. Not just the Abuja-Kaduna rail line, but also the first high-speed rail line in the south-south, which is the 326-kilometer Wari-Itakpe-Jeokuta rail line. That was inaugurated at the end of 2021. And then, of course, the Lagos Abeokuta-Ibadan high-speed rail line that started construction 2017. We completed it in 2021. Today, we're even linking it to our Apapa and Tin Can ports to decongest the ports and depressurize the roads around the ports. That's just the railways. If you look at airports, for example, before 2015, there was not a single new international airport in the country after 16 years of our highest oil revenues. Today, there are nearly five. We have a new international airport in Abuja that was launched in 2017. We have the new Matala Mohammed International Airport Terminal in Lagos that was inaugurated at the end of last year, 2022. We have the new Port Harcourt International Airport, which was once rated as one of the worst airports in the world. It was President Muhammadu Buhari that built it and completed it in 2018, commissioned by Governor Yemi Osinbajo at that time. And then, of course, the new Akanuga International Airport Terminal in Enugu. So across this country, across the geopolitical zones, you have new airports. We have the first new deep-sea port in Lekki, the first new deep-sea port in this country in 40 years. Constructed, started, and completed under this administration. And of course, I have not even begun to talk about all of the $12 billion NLNG Train 7 investment in River State, which is obviously going to add one-third of our total current gas production capacity to that current total when it's completed. But in addition to that, we have built the $2.8 billion Jiokuta to Kaduna to Kano gas pipeline. The phase one of Port Harcourt refinery reconstruction is in March, meaning that we're going to have the first massive batch of refined petroleum motor spirit coming out of Port Harcourt refinery for the first time in 25 years in March, just right after the election. So you have so much going on. You have the $300 billion second Niger Bridge in the southeast started and completed under this administration. The $200 billion Bonibodo Road linking NLNG headquarters on Boni Island to the mainland of the Federation for the first time in our history to facilitate the road transport of gas products. This is started and completed by this administration. By the end of this year. Then, of course, you have in the southwest, you have the Lagos-Sagamu-Ibadan expressway in addition to the railway, as well as the new Apapa-Owosokitogate road. And then if you go to the north, my dear brother, I've already mentioned the airport and the rail line, but in addition to all of that, you also have the new Abuja-Kaduna-Zaria-Kano expressway. You have the new Kano-Katsina expressway that is northwest, going deeper into the northwest. And then in addition to that, you have the new Kano to Maiduguri expressway moving from the northwest to the northeast. So the entire is being linked.
Andrew, you've mentioned quite a lot of projects. And in fact, I would allude to that fact because some other people might have also in the past alluded to the fact that the current administration, the president, made quite an investment in infrastructure. I mean, Bishop Koka of the Sokoto Diocese was one person who pointed that out. But regardless, there were major factors or major sectors that the president, during his campaigns from 2015 to 2019, had pointed out that he was going to look into the economy, security, tackling insecurity and tackling corruption. In these areas, many people think not really much progress was made. What do you say?
Yeah, I think for us, it's very important to remind our viewers and our listeners to distinguish between the narratives of the Atiku Abubakar campaign and the actual reality on the ground as it relates to these issues. What do I mean specifically? Let's take one by one. Let's look at insecurity for a moment. Sometimes, you know, there's a tendency to have short memory as it relates to how things were in 2015 and how things are today. In 2015, just to remind our viewers, listeners, what did you have? In the Northeast, for example, let's break this down by geopolitical zone. In the Northeast, you had a Boko Haram insurgency, right, and a Nisrap insurgency, which effectively had one-third of the entire Northeast geopolitical zone under a parallel government structure of Iswap collecting taxes, administering land, running MES out of their palaces.
But we still have reports of those still happening in communities in the Northeast and the Northwest, where farmers have to pay to even go to their farms. And in Benue State, people can't even go to the farm as well.
It's very important that if you're asking me a question, you allow me to land. If my answer is not satisfactory, you cannot follow up. That is how, you know, journalists usually engage. Let me just land.
That doesn't mean I can't make a point when I feel like you're...
No.
We don't have a lot of time.
I would like to answer the question, please.
So go on.
In a professional manner, please. Thank you. So what I was saying is that you had one-third of the Northeast being administered by terrorist organizations. That's number one. Today, there is, if you are saying, or anybody is saying, because we know what is true and what is false, if you are saying that any part of this country today is being administered by a terrorist organization, it is absolute falsehood. It's misinformation. It is not true. Not a square inch of this country today is being administered by any terrorist organization. Nobody can make that claim. Nobody can make that claim today. Now, on top of that, you had a situation where 90% of the community that were run out of the community members that had been run out of communities into IDP camps have now today resettled in those communities. Borno State, for example, Yobe State, Adamawa State, are 90% resettled, about 10% remaining in the IDP camps that were reconstructing their original state of their community so that the last 10% can come back and resettle. All of the MEAs in the Northeast have come back to reconstructed palaces that were destroyed by these insurgent groups. The entire leadership structure, and this is a fact that is verifiable, the entire leadership structure of Boko Haram original and Iswap have been decimated. Today, Abubakar Shekau has been taken off the field, killed. Abu Musab al-Banawi of Iswap, the leader of Iswap, has been assassinated under the leadership of this commander-in-chief of the armed forces. What we are saying is that today, if you go to the Northeast, you have this is the account of everybody. It's not just APC saying it. It's a fact of life today. My Dubai airport that was shut down for 5 years has been in operation for over 2 years. The bombs that were going off all over the country, I was the reporter at AIP at that time that covered the this day bombing. I was at the site of these bombs. This thing is not something that I read in a newspaper. I was there. I know what it was like to live in Abuja from 2011 to 2015. When you didn't know if you leave your house, then you can come back in one piece. Bombings at Banex, the Wuse 2. Bombings at bus stops in Maraba. Bombings at churches. Bombings at all over the country. I'm sure you were in this country. Kaduna. Bombs everywhere. When was the last time you saw a bomb attack happen in this country? When was the last time? We had a situation with the bandits now going from the Northeast, which I think I have thoroughly addressed. Going to the Northwest now, where you want banditry. This had been a problem over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, particularly. What has since happened? I remember a time when you wake up in the morning, read the newspaper, and you say, 70 people killed last night in Zamfara, 50 people killed last night in Sokoto. This, that. You're not seeing those casualties anymore. You're not seeing those reports anymore. The point is that all is not yet Uhuru. We are not yet at the finish line. But anybody suggested that we have not made massive progress against Boko Haram and Iswap in the Northeast, against banditry in the Northwest, where Zamfara peace has returned to Zamfara, peace has returned to Sokoto, and many of these places where there were problems, then I think anybody saying that is trafficking in misinformation. And the last point I want to make is in the North Central, where we had, I was in Channel TV at the time, reporting on our newspaper review segment of the morning show. Every single morning, what will we see? 75 people killed last night in Benue, 50 people killed last night in Nassau, 20
so,
people
so,
killed
so,
last
so,
night
Andrew,
in
Plata. Andrew, if I would ask, are you saying now that we do not see those reports on newspaper pages anymore, or it has reduced? Are you saying it has reduced, or you're saying that doesn't happen anymore?
I am not saying, did you know if you heard what I said? I think most discerning Rivers people that heard what I said heard me say that we are not yet at the finish line, meaning that we are not in a perfectly, in fact, I don't even know where in the world anyway that you would find a perfectly crime-free society. I don't even think that exists. In South Africa, that has 40 million people. We have 200 million, 5 times the population. They have 10 times the daily murder rate than we have. And we don't call South Africa an insecure country, by the way, ironically, because their media doesn't treat, that does not label them that way in the international press, the way our media labels us that way in the international press. Today, my brother, you cannot tell me that when you wake up in the morning, you're reading casualty figures of 70 or 50 and 70 people being killed across this country. Show me one in the last month or so where you have seen anything like that. You will not be able to show me. So my point is that we have come a long way. It does not mean that we are a crime-free society, if that even exists. You go to the U.S. and all of these other countries that we call heaven on earth. None of them have crime-free societies where there are not several murders happening on a daily basis. People are going to be people. As long as you have a large population, you're going to have bad eggs. This is the reality of life. The question is, have you positioned yourself as a government and as a security, positioned your security architecture to effectively handle these bad eggs? And what we are saying is based on empirical evidence, not sentiment, not emotion, not political bias. If you're basing it on fact, you cannot say that we have not made massive progress across the Northwest, the North Central, and the Northeast in terms of insecurity. These are facts, my brother.
Okay. Well, before, I don't want to drag us back to the insecurity. I think you've already said we're not at Uhuru yet, so it means that we still have some of these attacks in certain parts of the country. But it brings us to something you mentioned, because we have a commercial coming up shortly, about the changes. Now, in the economy, recently we saw petrol go to as high as 300 or even 400, 800, 700 in this country. And this is like the first time anybody would say they're seeing something of that nature. And many expected that the president would doubles as the Minister of Petroleum would also, you know, at least make out a statement or say something. In handling of these situations, the oil sector, how well would you say it has been handled by the current administration compared to what we have before?
Yes, thank you very much. So, again, this is the right time to accentuate the legacies in these sectors. So, if we're talking about the oil and gas sector, this is probably one of the most, I would say, transformed sectors of any that Mr. President has administered. Why do I say so? I've already alluded to some of it, right? We have made a strategic pivot from oil into gas because we recognize that not only is oil obviously a very finite resource that is losing its popularity, I would say, amongst some of the largest consuming economies in the world in view of climate change and the move toward cleaner energy. But we know that natural gas is not one of those energy sources that is going to be losing popularity anytime soon. It's going to continue to be viable. So we've made that strategic pivot, which is why I mentioned the $12 billion investment that Mr. President has made in River State with the NLNG Train 7. And we're already in deep negotiations on Train 8, expanding our gas production capacity. But it's one thing to expand your gas production capacity, and it's another thing to know how you're going to transmit that gas from the south to the various parts of the country via pipeline. And that is why we have to make massive investments in pipeline. Which is why President Mohamed Dubani has not gotten a lot of credit for the fact that much of the infrastructure that previous administrations had inherited were actually constructed during his time as the Federal Commissioner of Petroleum Resources in 1976. A lot of it had run down over the course of the 40 years since then. He has had to come back now as President and Minister of Petroleum Resources to reconstruct and even expand on the initial construction works that he brought into place when he was the Federal Commissioner of Petroleum Resources in the 70s. Now, what he has done, in addition to the gas production, is expansion. What he has now done, too, is he has now put in place these pipelines. I mean, I already mentioned the AKK, which will deal with international export of Nigerian gas up through the northern region. So from the first part of it, on the AKK, what it's doing is it's going to allow northern industries to access gas from the Niger Delta to be able to power new textile industries, pharmaceuticals, plastics production and the like. But that's not even the main reason why the AKK is in place. It's just a benefit. The main reason why the AKK is in place is because it's the foundation stone for the larger Nigeria Trans-Saharan gas pipeline that's going to cut across through Kaduna, Kano, up through the Sahara. It will now link up with the Algerian pipeline network that will now carry, for the first time in our history, Nigerian gas from the Niger Delta all the way up to Western Europe. So President Mohamed Buhari is actively positioning Nigeria to replace Russian gas supply to Western Europe, earning us billions of new dollars every single year in the process in new revenues over the next 2 years. That pipeline is going to be completed in 60 days. I believe in March we're going to commission that AKK pipeline. That's a $2.8 billion.
For many people, they would look at, we have a commercial coming up, so BPA reacted to this after the commercial. But many people would say, with the issue with Ukraine and Russia at the time, Nigeria was supposed to benefit a lot, especially with the gas sanctions that was placed on Russia. But then it looked like some of these facilities were not in place, and many began to ask, well, in the past 7.5 years, what have we been doing? There's just that. And then there's the petrol situation, which you'd also have to address when we return. We were aware of how petrol that they say was contaminated got into the country from Belgium, the price of petrol, and many other issues around that area. There's also talks about the country being more divided than ever under this administration. All of these are some of the issues that we'd like you to address when we return. And most importantly, your presidential candidate, new presidential candidate for the APC, Bola Ahmed Tinubu, and what he brings to the table. After the commercial, we'll get you to talk on that. Stay tuned. Nigerian First.
We take off with the biggest conversations with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire. Settle you into your day when we say hello, Port Hackett.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on hard facts. Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station.
Chat Station.
And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
All right, we're back at 92.3 Nigeria Info. My guest still adjuring a lale aide to President Muhammadu Buhari, and we're reviewing the performance of the President Buhari administration, which is winding down, and also be taking a look at what should we expect from another APC-led federal government if it emerges victorious at the election. Well, I'm pretty sure you've been following the conversation and you've been hearing some of the performances outlined by Mr. Lale. So in case you want to make some contributions, you can call the phone number 070-0923-0923. We also have slight issues, I just learned, with our WhatsApp line. So you just have the option of calling 070-0923-0923. I go back now to my guest, Mr. Engelale. Thank you for staying on the line for us.
It's a privilege to be with you. Thank you.
Okay, so quickly, let's see how much we can cover because of the time we have left is quite limited. You've said quite a lot. The back and forth might be very difficult for us because we don't want to exhaust all the time trying to go back and forth. So quickly, just tell us about you. You were talking about the pipelines and transporting the country's gas to other parts of Africa and other parts of Western Europe, which is fantastic, and it's what many expected would have been in place. So we benefit hugely from what is happening with Russia, Ukraine, and other parts of Europe, where Russia is a major distributor of gas.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that's not the position right now. But let's come back home and look at the implications of this in the country. And starting with the petrol price, this is one area many would look at and say, this administration winding down, have they done much? Haven't they done much? It got to a record high in the country and it's got a lot of people worried because even now, we're still not selling at the official pump price of 165.
Yeah, thank you very much. First of all, let me say on the original point that you were making about the pipeline, I think anyone who's familiar with EPC contracting on national pipeline networks traversing hundreds of kilometers knows that this is not something you do in 12 months or 24 months. These are major projects with major scopes. I think that when you ask the question, why are we not positioned to take full advantage of the Russian-Ukrainian conflict immediately on day one of the conflict, for example, I think that question is better asked of the people who had 16 years and double the revenues and double the time to be able to put at least one pipeline in place, but could not even in all of that time. So if you're asking me why it is we've not been able to finish this pipeline in 7 years, when we are the ones struggling for revenues, dealing with a pandemic, dealing with two economic recessions, and still being the administration that put it in place, you would know that there's a choice in this election for Nigerians to make, and I think that choice is clear. But I will say this very quickly on the issue of fuel. I mentioned earlier in the conversation that the investment we have made in the, I believe, $1.9 billion reconstruction of the Port Harcourt refinery. I just mentioned that phase one is going to be concluded within the next 60 days. We've been working on this refinery now with the current contractor, which is an international contractor in partnership with Afexim Bank, a contractor that has established refineries across four different continents. They have now come to reconstruct the first major batch of refined PMS coming out of Port Harcourt refinery in almost 30 years. It's coming
coming out in March, that is going to be a big stabilizer in terms of making sure we have PMS supply from within the country. In addition to that, we have obviously established about three new modular refineries under this administration across the Niger Delta, but that's not really where the rubber hits the road. Where the rubber is hitting the road is in private sector. Incentivizing the private sector to establish refineries locally. So obviously we all know the Dangote refinery is going to be bringing out 445 barrels per day worth of refined PMS starting it should be in full operation. I believe the president is going to inaugurate that in about 3 or 4 days, the Dangote oil refinery. So it's going to start up. But the actual put out, the output of the total capacity of the refinery will be completed, I believe, in May. So that combined with Port Harcourt refinery is going to not only stabilize domestic supply of fuel, dealing with some of the pricing issues you've mentioned, but it's also going to position Nigeria to be earning billions of dollars in new foreign exchange earnings through the export of PMS to our West African counterparts and neighbors. In addition to that, my brother, I want to note that we have also incentivized the establishment of a new 200,000 barrels per day refinery in Akwa Ibom State that is currently under construction, that's owned by BUA, that is Abdulsamad Rabiu's BUA. They're constructing one. And then the last point I want to make on this is that when Mr. President, President Muhammadu Buhari, visited his South Korean counterpart, South Korean president, just about 2 or 3 months ago, they signed a major deal with Daewoo International, a major EPC contractor internationally that is in the business of constructing refineries around the world, including in the U.S. They are going to be the contractor that is going to reconstruct the Wari refinery and the Kaduna refinery, meaning that all three LNPC refineries will be reconstructed by internationally credible contractors, with the first one being Port Harcourt. So we are on course. I believe that when Nigerians look back, they're going to recognize that we lost 16 years, yes, but it's not a full loss if we can turn it around with continuity in government. And that's why I'm happy you raised what it is that His Excellency Ashwaji Bola Ahmed Tinubu is promising Nigerians.
That will now bring us to the various presidential candidates that we have. And they've all gone to the Chatham House, which many have questioned. But then again, it's a think tank house, and it's where you put out ideas to get to Nigerians in diaspora and possibly also attract foreign investment. What makes your candidate stand out? Because for so many people, questions have been raised with regards to the age. Secondly, some people feel the APC hasn't done much, so why would we want another APC candidate? Besides, he is being part of this government, and some people feel you've been part of the government and not much changed. We didn't feel it. Because whether you like it or not, on the streets of the country is where many people would look and say, when I go to the market, what I buy, how much I buy, it tells me another man whether the economy is getting better or not, and not just what we see on paper or plans that government said they're putting in place. It's how we get to the ordinary man, and for that reason many people feel that we can't support him. There's also the talks about the Muslim ticket. There's also most recently the allegations by the PDP, allegations of fraud. We can go on and forth. People even question his health, his age. All of these things have been put there. So where's the chance he has?
Yes, I enjoyed that long statement before that final bit of question. Let me just say very quickly that when we talk about some of the issues you raised, let's take them one by one. If we talk about...
Try and do it within the time we have.
Yes, absolutely. Well, within this election, you have 3 or 4 major presidential candidates, right? What we have said consistently is that the difference between the candidates, what distinguishes the difference between these candidates is going to be the issue of credibility. Meaning, when you were in the public service before now, what did you do with the power that you had where you served at? One candidate was governor of Anambra State, the current governor of Anambra State, who has been a political ally of the fellow, has come out to say that, look, all the investments you said you made, they are losing money. And even some of them, you were even a director in the brewery that you used state government money to contract, to build. On the other hand, you say all of the roads that you say you built, they were washed off, not before my administration, they were washed off even during the NPK administration. There's nothing to write home about. When Asiwaju Bola Tinubu says, you want to see my blueprint? You want to see what I did? Go to Lagos. You are not hearing Peter Obi say, you want to see my blueprint? You want to see what I did? Go to Anambra. He's not saying that.
No, yeah, he has. I mean, it was at the Chatham House recently, just to interject here, he said there are records of the things he did in Anambra State. You can go find out. Yeah, and if they are not true.
No. There's a difference between saying that you have a, I think what he was alluding to, a narrow sector that was essentially saying, well, in education, our exam scores went up during the time I was in office. He has never claimed to have totally renewed the infrastructure on Anambra State. He has never made that claim. He has never even tried to make that claim because he knows that the current governor will make him look bad if he makes that claim. So he was very specific in what he was talking about and very careful in what he was talking about. Now, if we're talking about Atiku Abubakar, he was the former vice president, chairman of the Privatization Council. I don't even want to get too deeply into the recent recording where he was talking about SPVs and how him and Obasanjo defrauded the country by using government funds and funneling it to the PDP at that time when they were in office. That's a separate issue. But even in his official capacity as the chairman of the Privatization Council, what happened? And this one touches close to home in the South. The Delta Steel Company of $1.89 billion worth of assets, he sold it for $13 billion to one of his friends. What happened to that asset? After it was concessioned, they immediately collateralized the entire place, essentially using the assets that government had invested now over a period of time, $1.89 billion, to now take cheap dollar loans from domestic money banks and run out of the country with the dollar loans using those assets in the concession facility as collateral. The same thing at the aluminum smelting company in Akwa State, $3.2 billion facility that he concessioned out to one of his friends for $130 million. You're talking about less than 5% of the value of that institution. What did they do? They cannibalized it the same way. What we are saying is that everybody has a record. And nobody, so when we talk about His Excellency Asiwaju Bola Tinubu, you say, okay, what is the record? The record is this. In 1999, 50% of the Lagos State Civil Service, right, was made up of ghost workers, meaning that all of the 50% of the entire recurrent expenditure of Lagos State Civil Service was paid to just a few fat cats hiding behind a bunch of fake identities. He is the one who brought into the country this issue of biometrics, biodata, and automating all of these salary payments. And in the process of doing so, saved 50% of the Lagos State recurrent expenditure in the process. He was the one who massively renewed infrastructure across Lagos State, roads, bridges, port entry points and the like, the ones that are federally owned. One more point, my brother. On the issue of revenue generation,
yes.
He generated 600 million naira monthly income of Lagos State. By the time he left office, it was times 10. Today in Nigeria, you cannot find a single governor. And there are some good governors like Elwin Fire and some others. But none of them in the history of Nigeria since 1999, the fourth republic history, can tell you that they did a times 10 of the revenue profile of their state.
Can you not relate that to the recent realities? The fact that the realities at the time that Asiwaju was governor and the realities now, just like your government would say, well, we're tackling these issues and those issues, and that would affect. But that aside, the allegations that also, well, the same way that you're accusing or alleging that the PDP presidential candidate had companies that I don't think any court has confirmed. I said, oh, he's guilty of fraud or of.
But secondly, let
me get to my question. We're not going to argue on that now. Let's get to my question, which is many allegations against the presidential candidate of the APC as well. The NSAS issues has been one major part of it, where people felt that, or people alleged that he has connection with some of the companies that were involved at the toll gate. There were talks that some of the people who run Lagos, in fact, there's the popular saying that he runs Lagos because people feel that there are people that he has placed in positions and offices, both family members and otherwise, who do his biddings and are loyal to him. How do we address all of these things?
Can I answer you?
Yes.
All right, so my response to you is this. First of all, on the issue of, it's ironic that On the one hand, when it comes to Atiku, you are saying that nothing has passed through the court of law. On the other hand, when it comes to Atiku Tinubu, you are bringing all sorts of unproven allegations.
But then, thank you. You called them allegations. It's the same way we said those for Atiku were allegations. So let's get to the question.
The point here is that you have asked about the mental and physical fitness earlier on in the conversation. He's 70 years old. He had a knee surgery, right? The knee is fully healed. Nobody that has been anywhere near Asiwaju Tinubu would question his mental fitness or his physical fitness. He's running around. He's walking around. He's campaigning across the country in a way that even the candidates you say are young, they are not campaigning the way that he's campaigning. He stood in front of all of the business executives, banking CEOs, oil and gas CEOs, and all of that, stood for over 1 hour, addressed them with a speech, and then stood and took their questions, answered their questions, standing. So it's like, what more do you want to see? And this is why we say we need to distinguish between the narratives that some people are perpetuating and the actual reality on ground. People tend to get carried away in these kind of sentimental narratives that are echoed so many times that you think they're true just because everybody's saying the same thing. But you don't critically analyze what your eyes are seeing when somebody is moving across the country with no assistance. The other candidate that we're talking about is being helped down the stairs. As he's going downstairs, he's being helped, and nobody's saying anything about his health. So look, the point here is this. I don't want to waste too much time on some of these issues. I think the key thing is, why would Nigerians want to vote APC to continue? And this is what I want to get to. This is very, very important. First of all, you have mentioned the thing of, what touches the common man and all of that, that all things on paper and all of that. There's nobody that is suggesting that the new international airport in Port Harcourt is on paper. People fly in and out of that place. They know what was there before. They know what is there now. There's not a single project I have mentioned to you during this program that you cannot go and verify, that you will not see videos all over the media. If you cannot make it to Kano yourself, you can see the videos of what I'm talking about in Kano. So nothing is hidden. We have done the things that I have said we have done, and everybody knows it. Now, the issue is, if you're talking about the living standard of the common man, this is what we need to talk about. We cannot pretend that Nigeria is some silo that is immune to the factors plaguing the global economy at the moment. What am I talking about? A global economy that's yet to recover fully from COVID-19, made worse, exacerbated by the effects of the Russian-Ukrainian conflict, where energy prices have skyrocketed, food prices have skyrocketed as a result of one of the largest grain producers in the world not being able to fully export their grain production. It's affecting everything, prices around the world. Nigeria will not be exempted. Interest rates around the world are going up. Inflation around the world is going up. It's not just in Nigeria. Layoffs are going up.
Many would argue that in 2016, 2017, before the Russian war, before the Russian-Ukraine war, before COVID, these prices of items and staples were already going up in the country. Okay.
The two economic recessions came before the pandemic. I want to remind you, right? Then the pandemic now came, right? In spite of all of that, all of our revenue challenges, we've been able to do the things we've been able to do. My point is, you keep talking about living standard, right? As if living standard before 2015 was fantastic. Has it ever been? My point is that things have improved because of the investments we've been able to make. Those are jobs created. It doesn't mean that life has been easy in this country. Of course, that's not what we're saying. If life is not easy right now in places like the US and the UK, how will it be easy here? We have a global economic crisis. Most of the economies around the world are going into recession as we speak. Things are tough everywhere, but especially here now. So the point here, and this is why we talk about renewed hope, is not because of the failures of President Muhammadu Buhari's administration. No, it's not because he failed. It's because we recognize the global economic picture around the world, and also we recognize the impact it is having on the local economy. These are facts. These are realities. My brother, everything is interconnected.
Okay.
But what I am now saying to you, very quickly, the last point I want to make, is that this Asiwaju Buhari met you is promising a few key things. One, and I think this is the most transformative, and this is the one most people need to know about. He's going to establish a new consumer credit system. How it's going to work is he's going to, through the Central Bank of Nigeria under his leadership, he's going to direct the CBN to provide enhanced interbank settlement offers and enhanced monetary policy ratios to the domestic money banks in the country to free up trillions of new naira that will be lent to the real sector, lent to ordinary low-income and middle-income Nigerian citizens, so that they will have access to lease-to-own mortgages, lease-to-own automobile.
All right, Mr. Lally.
We recognize today a big part of the problem in the country is you are asking a Nigerian to pay upfront in cash for a house, upfront in cash for a car, upfront in cash for a year's rent. What we are saying is that we are going to evolve a system where if you're earning 100,000 naira per month, the bank can now say, okay, we have seen that you have steady inflows.
Mr. Ajuri, it brings us to this. These ideas, he's been part of the government. Why weren't these ideas suggested in the government, and why weren't they implemented?
This is falsehood now. I don't know why you're saying
he's a member of the APC, and the APC would have a blueprint for the country before it brings this candidate into power.
No, wait. You're right, that's a false statement. How has he been part of the government? Has he done a contract or had an appointment? He's not part of the government.
Well, he's a part of... Okay. He's a part of the APC.
No, he's not part of this government.
Is he a part of the APC? Is he a part of the APC?
Yes, he's part of the APC.
Does the APC have an agenda for the country?
Absolutely.
Is the APC the party in power at the moment? Is the APC the party in power at the moment?
My brother, are you asking me a question or answering your own question?
I'm asking you whether the APC is the party in power at the moment.
I think that that's an elementary question. It's not a serious question.
All right, then. Let's get to the phone lines. Let's get to the phone lines, at least in the last few minutes. Let's hear from Rivers people so you can react to some of their contributions. I think
excellent.
That. All right, 070-0923-0923. That is the phone number to call, 070-0923-0923. Please just be precise and go straight to the point. Nigeria Info, good morning.
Hello, Andrew, good morning, and good morning to the guests in the studio on call. Yeah, my name is Ogundu, and I'm calling you from Rumokoro. I think it's quite unfortunate that our guest is fluent in speaking based on the aspect that he couldn't convince some of us out here. As far as I'm concerned, I'm an APC man. The problem we are having is your candidate, the candidate of our party, it's not the right candidate. So let's tell him the truth. I want to ask him a simple question. Why was the APC primary done the way it was done? That is my simple question. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thank you very much. Let's take another call. You react to that. Let's just add another call to it or two more. Nigeria Info, good morning. Hello, Nigeria Info. All right, I think we lost that call. 070-0923-0923. There's one more. Nigeria Info, good morning.
Hello,
good morning to you.
Good morning.
All right, straight to the point with your question, your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Joseph John.
All right, Joseph.
I'm calling from Port Harcourt.
Okay, Joseph in Port Harcourt, straight to the point with your question. Go on.
My question is that, are you asking questions about this, the problem that APC put us in fact? But it's not good to answer you. I want to make you answer that question you asked him.
Which of the questions exactly?
The question that you asked him about is the problem that APC put us inside, whether the APC is ruling now or another party is ruling. But it's not answer that question before you enter phone life. We want me to answer that question.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And one more, Nigeria Info. Just add one more and then we go Nigeria Info.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Your name, please, and where you're calling from.
Yes, my name is Elder Churchill. I'm calling from Port Harcourt.
All right, straight to the question, please. We are already out of time.
Yes, the question is, what are Nigerians doing, including the National Assembly, led by the APC government, are doing to make sure that those promises made that are righteous, to make the people rejoice, are taken, are done. I want to contribute to the fact that, yes, the government made some promises they did not fulfill, but they also have to accomplish certain things.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ajuri, you have less than two minutes and a few seconds to react to that.
Okay, so let me go ahead and do that.
Yeah, a few seconds.
Very quickly, I would just say my dear brother seems to be a very politically active person, the first caller who was asking about the APC primary. I understand why he feels potentially aggrieved, because naturally the father and founder of Rivers APC is Right Honorable Kerotimi Amichi, and of course he came second to Asiwaju Bola Netinubu. So I can understand if there are some hard feelings there. I don't think anybody has queried the legitimacy or transparency of the vote at the primary. Some people have said, oh, was it monetized and things of that nature, but no allegations have been proven along that line. So I don't really know what else to add to that, but I can just say that I understand why he will feel aggrieved based on where he's standing. The second person that called would have referred to the question you asked me. You said, is APC in power? That was the question you asked me. He thought you asked me, what are the problems that APC put us in? That is not what you asked me. So if you ask me the question, is APC the party in power, I would just say yes to answer that question.
All right, let's take this commercial. When we return, you wrap up.
Okay,
stay tuned.
You.
Welcome back to the show. This is Nigeria Info.
All right, let's get back to my guest, Ajuringe Lale, aide to President Muhammadu Buhari, as we attempt to wrap things up. Mr. Ajuri, thank you for staying on the line for us. Let's get you to make your closing remarks, I'll put it that way, as we attempt to wrap up.
Yeah, thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank all of our listeners for taking time in their busy days to be a part of this conversation. River State is a great state. It will continue to be great, and it will only get greater as we enthrone even better leadership moving forward. Let me say very quickly that on the issue of this election, on the issue of APC, ultimately the question is going to be, are you going to vote the party that delivered on all of the things that I have mentioned during this conversation with half the time and half the revenues? Are you going to vote the party that did none of what I've described with double the time and double the revenues? And when you ask the question, President Muhammadu Buhari laid a foundation. He did what previous governments should have done. Now that the foundation has been laid, His Excellency Asiwaju Bola Netinubu is saying, look, we are going to take this thing to a new height. What we're going to do is we're going to establish a consumer credit system.
All right, Lale, thank you very much.
Okay, I can't go into specifics.
Time is already gone. Ifeyemi Andrew, Hello Port Harcourt next.